That's all we intend to do today. How long until we get there?
Approximately 4 hours, Thrawn said. In the meantime, I've had a combat suit prepared for you. One with more armoring and self-sealant capabilities than your suit from the Bargain Hunter. Go below and put it on. The armorer will assist you. It took Cardass and the armorer most of the first 3 hours to get the suit fitted correctly, with the 4th hour spent in checking him out on its features. Once that was finished, though, he found the suit quite comfortable to wear, though noticeably heavier than the simple vac suits he was used to. He returned to the bridge to find that in his absence, Thrawn and the rest of the bridge crew had also donned their combat suits.
Welcome back, the commander greeted him, running an eye over his suit. We're nearly there.
Cardass nodded and moved to his usual place beside the other's command chair.
Where are they?
He asked, peering through the viewports at the stars and a very distant sun.
There,
Thrawn said, pointing a few degrees off the starboard bow.
Sensors, magnify.
The main display rippled and steadied.
Cardass caught his breath, his chest suddenly squeezing tightly against his heart. In the center of the display was a horrible, terrifying, impossible sight. A pair of Trade Federation battleships.
You recognize them?
For a moment, Thrawn's question didn't register. Cardass continued to stare at the image, his eyes tracing along the curved split-ring configuration of the ships and up the antenna towers that distinguished Trade Federation battleships from simple freighters. Then his brain seemed to catch, and he tore his eyes away from the sight.
Yes, I do, he said, marveling at how calm his voice sounded.
They're battleships from a group called the Trade Federation.
Members of your republic?
Cardass hesitated.
Technically speaking, yes. But these days they seem to be largely ignoring our laws and directives. But you already knew where they were from, didn't you?
The hull markings follow a similar pattern to those on the Bargain Hunter, Thrawn said. I thought there was a reasonable chance they were from your republic.
But they don't represent the republic itself, Cardass added hastily. The republic doesn't have any army of its own.
So you've told me, Thrawn said, his voice suddenly cold. You also told me the Republic doesn't condone slavery.
That's right, we don't, Cardass agreed cautiously.
Then why did I find evidence of slavery aboard the ship that was pursuing you?
The rings of tension around Cardass's chest tightened a few more turns. He'd forgotten all about Proga.
I also told you there were some cultures in our area that do keep slaves, he said, fighting to keep his voice steady. The Huts are one of them.
And the Trade Federation?
No, Cardass said.
Well, not that I've ever heard, anyway.
They're so heavily into droids, they probably wouldn't know what to do with slaves if they had them.
Cardass nodded toward the display, which could be a serious problem for us right now. Each of those battleships carries over 1,000 droid starfighters, not to mention a few thousand battle droids and the landers and carriers to move them around.
Then this is an invasion force.
Cardass winced. I don't know. I don't think so. Not with only 2 of them.
But they could be here to attack us.
I don't know why they're here, Cardass insisted, sweat gathering around his collar. Why don't you ask them?
A faint smile creased Thrawn's face.
Yes. Why don't we?
He swiveled around.
Communications. Identify their main command frequency and create a channel. These people speak basic, I presume?
Yes, Cardass said. But they'll also have protocol droids aboard that can translate Sibisti.
Thank you. But I'd prefer to see the reaction when they're hailed in the language of the Republic, Thrawn said.
Doriana was still fumbling with his tunic belt as he hurried through the open blast doors onto the bridge.
What's this about an attack?
He asked, as he crossed the walkways to where Cav stood in front of his command chair.
Soothe yourself, Master Stratus, Cav said. It is not as serious as was first thought. This is Commander Mithq Ron Nuruodo of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet.
A voice said from the comm speaker beside the Vice Lord's chair.
Please identify yourselves and state your intentions.
He has been repeating that message for 10 minutes,
Cav said contemptuously.
But then, what else can he do?
Explain,
Doriana growled. You can start by telling me who he is.
How should I know?
Cav said scornfully.
But he is a braggart beyond anything I have yet seen.
He seated himself in his chair and touched a control, and a tactical overlay appeared on the main display.
Behold,
he said, waving his long fingers.
He dares to threaten us with 3 small cruisers and 9 fighters. Most likely they are pirates with a sense of bluff as large as a dog's pride.
This is Commander
the message repeated.
Ron Nuruodo,
I hear no threat in that message, Vice Lord.
Fleet.
Doriana pointed out.
Yourselves
all I hear is a local
intentions.
Asking what we're doing in his territory.
The threat is implied, Master Stratus,
Cav countered.
It is built into all warships, as much a part of them as weapons and shields.
Doriana looked at the tactical, then at the corresponding telescope display.
Maybe he's got more firepower hanging back in reserve.
No,
Cav assured him.
We have done a complete sensor scan of the entire area. Those 12 ships are all there are.
This is Commander Mithq Ron Nuruodo of the Chiss.
Shall we consider this an unscheduled drill?
Please identify yourself.
Cav added, as the message continued to play in the background.
Let's try talking first,
Doriana suggested, sitting down on the couch beside the other. The fact that this Mithron Nuruodo spoke basic might very well mean he was a pirate with some familiarity with some of the outer reaches of the Republic.
Open a hailing channel.
Open!
Doriana reached over to Cav Station and keyed the control.
I greet you, Commander Mithron Nuruodo. This is Stratus, commanding Special Task Force 1.
My greetings in return, Commander Stratus.
Mithron Nuruodo's voice came back.
Please explain to me the purpose of your task force.
We intend no harm to you or your people, Doriana said. But I'm afraid the details of our mission must remain confidential.
I'm afraid in turn that your reassurances are insufficient,
Mithron Nuruodo said. Beside Doriana, Cav muttered something.
I'm sorry, Commander,
Doriana said, throwing a warning look at the Nymoidian. Unfortunately, I'm under orders.
Why do you waste time this way?
Cav demanded. Cursing under his breath, Doriana lunged for the mute control. With all due respect, Vice Lord, what do you think you're doing?
What do you think you are doing?
Cav countered.
They are no more than a parasite fly fluttering against the window. Let us destroy them and be done with it.
If you don't mind, I'd first like to find out who they are and where they come from, Doriana said.
We can learn that from their charred remains,
Cav said, drawing himself up to his full height.
The time for talk is over.
With a decisive jab of his finger, he cut off the comm channel.
Order the Keeper to launch half its droid starfighters,
he called across the bridge, gesturing toward the 2nd Trade Federation battleship.
3 groups will attack the intruders, the rest forming a defense screen around the task force. An order transfer of command. I will control all the starfighters from here.
Yes, Vice Lord,
one of the Nymoidians said.
Do we launch our starfighters as well?
We will hold them in reserve.
Cav looked at Doriana.
In case they have reinforcements on the way,
he added, almost grudgingly.
Here they come, Cardass said, pointing at the display. Droid starfighters. You see them?
Yes, of course, Thrawn said calmly.
All vessels pull back. Cardass, you said droids can think and act on their own. Do these droid starfighters also have that capability?
I don't think so, Cardass said, trying to unfreeze his mind and think as the Springhawk began moving backward.
No, I'm sure they don't. They're remotely controlled in groups from one of the battleships.
Come, Thrawn called.
Have you located and identified their control frequencies?
Yes, Commander, the comm officer reported. The control appears to be secured with a rolling encryption system. I estimate maximum range to be 10,000 visvia.
Pull us back to 11,000, Thrawn ordered, turning back to Cardass.
10,000 visvia is approximately 16,000 of your kilometers. Does that sound like the correct operating range?
Cardass spread his hands helplessly. I'm sorry, but I don't know.
No apologies needed, Thrawn assured him. At any rate, we'll know soon enough.
Enemy fighters still approaching? One of the crewers warned. Main group is holding back.
Interesting, Thrawn said thoughtfully. The main body appears to be forming a defensive screen around the larger vessels. Considering his numerical advantage, this Commander Stratus seems unusually cautious.
Attackers pulling back, the sensor officer called. Reforming into an outer screen between us and the fleet.
Apparently we were correct about the 10,000 visvia range, Thrawn concluded.
Excellent. So what do we do now? Cardass asked.
For a moment, Thrawn sat silently, his eyes narrowed as he gazed at the displays.
We try an experiment, he said at last.
Incoming!
One of the Nymordians in the control pits called sharply. Single fighter, Vector 042 by 088!
The fool, Cav said with a snort. Does he think us inattentive? Outer group, intercept and destroy!
Doriana watched the displays as the three groups of droid starfighters reformed from their outer picket screen and swung to intercept the lone alien fighter. But they had barely settled into their attack vector when the intruder broke off, swinging around in a tight curve and hurrying back to the safety of distance.
Return them to patrol, Cav ordered. Does this Mithraudo not realize how badly he is outmatched?
Maybe all he wants is to sit back there out of range and watch us,
Doriana pointed out. I don't need to remind you that we can't afford to have witnesses around when outbound flight gets here.
Do you suggest they are Senate spies?
Or they might be from the Jedi, or from Palpatine, or from someone else, Doriana said. All I know is that no one this far from the Republic should be speaking basic.
He comes at us again, Vice Lord,
the Nymoidian at the sensors called.
Same fighter, same vector.
Same response, then,
Cav called back.
Perhaps he is trying to judge exactly how far our control extends.
Be careful,
Doriana warned. If they figure out how to jam the signal, those starfighters will go dormant.
And we'll self-destruct a few minutes later,
Cav said impatiently.
Thank you, Master Stratus. I am familiar with my own weaponry. See, again he pulls back, no wiser than he was before.
Unless he's a decoy, Doriana said, searching the other displays. He's up to something, Vice Lord.
Whatever it is, it will gain him nothing,
Cav said. On the display, the retreating fighter suddenly flipped over and again charged in.
Vice Lord,
a Nymoidian began.
Same response,
Cav cut in.
I see now his plan, Master Stratus. He hopes to drain the starfighters of their fuel and then drive in unopposed. What he does not realize is that I still have all the Dark Venger starfighters in reserve, plus half of the Seekers.
Maybe, Doriana murmured, his vague sense of uneasiness deepening as he watched the same scenario play itself out for a third time. Once again, the starfighters chased the intruder away. Once again, the alien ship flew out of range and flipped over for another run. The show repeated twice more, and Doriana was just checking the chrono to see how close the starfighters were to their 25-minute fuel time limit when Cav abruptly slammed his fist on the arm of his chair.
I'm weary of this game, he said. You, order the Keeper to advance and to launch the rest of its starfighters into shield configuration. Hold it,
Doriana cut in. Suddenly, the scenario had changed. The fighter was again retreating with starfighters in pursuit, but this time,
the rest of the alien force had leapt forward, driving hard toward the gap that had opened up between them and the main task force.
And so they make their final mistake,
Cav said with satisfaction.
Signal the starfighters to attack.
The Nymoidian acknowledged and tapped at his board. But to Doriana's disbelief, the droids didn't respond. Instead, they continued in pursuit of the retreating fighter.
Order them to attack!
Cav snapped again.
What are you doing? Call them to the attack! They do not respond!
The other Nymoidian called back.
I don't believe it, Cardass murmured as he watched the droid starfighters ignore the incoming Chiss ships completely as they headed mindlessly toward deep space. How did you get them to do that?
The command signal uses a rolling encryption, Thrawn explained, as the Springhawk shot forward past the now vanished outer defense screen. But with so many fighters requiring signals, I knew the rotation would have to be a limited one. It turns out that there are only 3 separate encryption patterns for this group. I simply recorded the version the droids would be expecting next, then broadcast it to them with enough power to override whatever their masters in the battleship were trying to send.
But how could you figure out...
Oh... Cardass interrupted himself as it finally clicked. With your fighter always going in on the same vector, and the droid's command always the same come out of this formation and attack the enemy on this vector code, the only part that ever changed was the encryption pattern itself,
which allowed us to isolate the command we wanted and duplicate it,
Thrawn confirmed. He tapped a key on his board.
All vessels, attack pattern Dimoporai.
Here they come, Doriana muttered, his fingers digging tensely into the couch cushion beside him.
The incoming aliens were widening their formation now, sacrificing the protection of overlapping shields to gain extra maneuvering room. Swarms of starfighters from the nearer parts of the defense screen were breaking their own formation in response, sweeping in over a wide, 3-dimensional wavefront toward the intruders. The two groups were nearly within laser range of each other. And then, each of the alien fighters launched a single missile. There was a subtle flicker in the indicator lights of the Dark Venge's computer command board, as the starfighter's sensor information was collected, compiled, and analyzed, and the proper response formulated. The response was translated into 100 updated commands, which were then sorted, encrypted, and transmitted back to the primitive droid brains riding in their armored casings. A sliver of a second later, the starfighters responded to those commands with a rain of concentrated laser fire that blew all 9 missiles into shrapnel.
A foolish waste of effort, Cav commented. The range was clearly too great for...
Hold it, Doriana said, frowning at the displays. There was something still moving along the shattered missiles' lines of flight. Filmy spots of nearly invisible haze that seemed to be growing larger as they sped toward the incoming starfighters.
Call them back, he told Cav urgently.
But it was too late. Even as the alien attack formation abruptly came apart, with all 11 ships shooting off in all different directions, the hazy spots intersected their target starfighter groups. There were multiple flashes of subdued light.
They do not respond!
One of the Nymoidians called from the computer board.
9 groups of droids have gone silent!
Connor nets, Doriana snarled.
This is impossible,
Cap said, his 5-cornered hat bobbing as he swung his head back and forth around the bridge.
How can he do this?
Get the rest of the starfighters into space, Doriana ground out.
Now!
Cab didn't need any prompting.
Order Keeper to activate all remaining droid starfighters. They will launch when ready, and move all those already launched to intercept.
Wait a minute, Doriana objected.
You can't leave our other flanks unguarded. Against what?
Cav retorted.
This is the battlefront. If we do not defend it, there will be no other flanks left to guard.
He gestured across the bridge.
Obey my order.
Here they come,
Cardass murmured, wondering if Thrawn had finally sliced off more than he could serve. The Chiss had dispatched those first few groups of droid starfighters with relative ease, but tricks like that only worked once against a given opponent. And now, all the rest of those hundreds of starfighters were sweeping around the flanks of the Trade Federation fleet, heading straight toward them. Unless that was exactly what Thrawn had been waiting for. Cardass shifted his eyes across the displays, looking for the cruiser that had slipped away from them just before the fighting started. If the main Chiss force was merely a diversion. But the Whirlwind wasn't charging in from the side for a sucker punch attack. It was still sitting quietly in space, apparently being held in reserve. He looked back at the incoming starfighters. I hope you've got one great father of a shock net up your sleeve, he warned.
We'll certainly have to consider creating such a device if we begin facing opponents like this on a regular basis,
Thrawn said dryly.
Tell me, what happens to these droids if their communication signals are cut off?
If the... Are you talking about jamming?
You disapprove?
No, of course not, Cardass said. But Trade Federation command signals are supposed to be unjammable. They can change frequencies and command patterns instantly. The minute you block off one part of the spectrum, they just shift to another.
And if you block the entire spectrum at once?
Cardass stared at him. The man was serious. You can't blanket the whole area, Commander. It's too big. The minute you start, they'll know what you're doing and send a set of contingency orders to everything outside your jamming. Those droid starfighters may not be smart, but they're certainly capable of downloading enough general commands to keep them functioning until they've pounded us to dust.
Only if there are any starfighters still outside the jamming, Thrawn pointed out. But it seems our opponent has taken care of that problem for us.
He pointed.
Even as we close the distance, he is converging all his starfighters into this one small area.
Cardass stared at the displays. What about your own communications? If you jam the whole spectrum, you'll be out of touch with your people too.
Fortunately, my warriors are capable of more than simply downloading general commands, Thrawn said. Let's see which side's battle philosophy proves the more versatile.
Leaning forward, he took a deep breath.
Full spectrum jamming. Now.
For a long, horrifying second, the Dark Venge's bridge was filled with a screech like something from the restless undead of ancient Coruscant legend. Then the Nymoidian at the comm slapped at the switch, cutting off the wail and leaving only a distant ringing in Doriana's ears.
What in the name of... Vice Lord, we are being jammed!
The Nymoidian called.
All starfighters have gone dormant!
Doriana stared out the viewports, his stomach tightening into a hard knot. The starfighters had indeed locked down, each of them now flying mindlessly in whatever direction it had last been pointed, and swerving with ease through the drifting obstacle course, blasting away at the helpless starfighters as they went. Mithron Yoruido's alien ships were headed straight for them, the fighters in screening formation ahead of the two cruisers.
Get our starfighters back online!
Cav ordered tautly, jabbing a hand toward the Nymoidians at the command board.
Get them back! We are trying!
One of them called.
We have opened laser communications to as many as we can!
But those comm lasers were line of sight, Doriana knew. And with a sinking feeling, he realized that this limitation was growing ever tighter as expanding clouds of dust and debris from the shattered starfighters began to block even this last gasp communication method. A few of the starfighters were coming back to life, but they were targeted and destroyed by the aliens before they could organize into an effective fighting force.
What about the other ships?
He demanded.
Why aren't they attacking? There!
Someone called, and Doriana saw an arm point upward from one of the pits.
The hard cells have launched their missiles!
About time, Doriana muttered, feeling a cautious hope rising within him as five clusters of three missiles each shot toward the attackers. The attackers reacted instantly, five of the fighters abandoning their thrust toward the battleships and curving toward the outside of the Trade Federation formation. The missiles, locking in on the movement, followed.
Good!
Cab said with satisfaction. The next salvo will draw the rest of the fighters away and leave the cruisers undefended. Then our own quad laser batteries can destroy them with ease.
Maybe, Doriana said cautiously, following the fleeing alien craft with his eyes. They were cutting in and out through the masses of drifting starfighters, clearly trying to throw off the pursuing missiles' homing locks. But to no avail. Techno Union hardware was among the best in the Republic, and the missiles maneuvered their own way through the clutter with ease as they continued to close the gap. The aliens reached the edge of the starfighter cloud and curved tightly back into it again, driving inward toward the main ships. Again, the missiles matched the maneuver. The fighters straightened out, and then, in near unison, each dropped a small object aft toward its pursuers. And Doriana stiffened as a well-remembered hazy cloud erupted from each of them, unfolding directly in the path of the incoming missile clusters.
More Connor nets,
he snapped. But there was nothing the onlookers could do. The nets enveloped the missile clusters and flashed their killing jolts of high-voltage current, destroying homing electronics and drive systems alike, and leaving the missiles as dead as the drifting starfighters around them. Only, once again, Mithron Yoruodo hadn't been content to merely protect his own ships from attack. Even as Doriana's hands curled into helpless fists, their inertia sent the missiles slamming into the Techno-Union ships. There were multiple blasts as sections of hull metal shattered outward into space. And then, like a minor sun going off at close range, one of the ships exploded completely.
What?
Cav gasped.
No! Not from a single missile cluster! This is impossible!
Everything Mithron Yoruodo does is impossible, Doriana retorted bitterly. The missiles must have hit a weak spot.
What kind? Where could it be?
Doriana snorted. Just watch his ships. They'll be targeting the same spot on all the rest of them. He was right. Within minutes, the alien fighters and cruisers had successfully dodged the desperate flurry of missiles the Techno-Union ships were now throwing at them, and had efficiently destroyed every one of them. The spot, Doriana noted with morbid fascination, was the line junction to the massive external fuel cells.
We must escape,
Cap said, his voice shaking.
Helm, prepare to jump to light speed.
Wait a minute, Doriana protested, grabbing at his arm. You can't just abandon the fleet.
What fleet?
Cav snarled.
Look around you, Master Stratus. What fleet?
Doriana felt his throat tighten. He was right, of course. All six of the Techno-Union hard cells were gone, half of them destroyed by their own missiles. The seven escort cruisers, never intended to operate against such enemies without capital ship support, were being systematically hunted down and eliminated. Only the two Trade Federation battleships were still in any condition to fight or run. But with their communications still blocked, there was no way to order a general retreat. If the Dark Venge left, it would be leaving alone.
Jump calculated,
the helmsman called.
Make the jump,
Cav ordered, glaring at Doriana as if daring him to argue.
Do you hear me? Now! The hyperdrive does not respond,
the helmsman said, his voice bubbling with sudden panic.
It claims we are too close to a planetary mass.
Doriana twisted around to look at the row of status boards. That was what the reading said, all right.
Malfunction?
No malfunction,
Cav murmured, his voice dull and fatalistic.
Merely more Chiss wizardry.
A fresh flicker of light caught Doriana's eye, and he looked back out the viewports. Across the field of carnage, droid starfighters were starting to explode as too many minutes without communication passed, and they began to activate their self-destruct mechanisms. Through the scattered bursts of fire, Doriana saw the Keeper suddenly lurch as the upper surface of its starboard ring half erupted in 100 small explosions.
Vice Lord!
Someone called.
I know,
Cab said with a tired sigh.
The starfighters I ordered prepped are exploding.
Doriana nodded, his own bitterness long since faded into a deep sense of the inevitable.
Then it is over,
Cav said quietly. Lifting his hands, he carefully removed his five-cornered hat and set it with equal care on the floor in front of him.
We are all dead.
It would seem so. Doriana agreed mechanically, feeling his forehead creasing as a strange fact suddenly struck him. With all the death and debris and charred hulks of ships floating all around them, the Dark Venge itself had yet to be so much as scratched. He took another longer look at the status boards. Except for the inexplicably dormant hyperdrive, everything else seemed perfectly functional.
Or maybe not, he added. I think Mithron Yoruodo has something else in mind for us.
Cav snorted derisively.
And what precisely gave you that impression?
Puzzled, Doriana turned back, to find that one of the alien cruisers had suddenly appeared outside the viewports. It was hovering bare meters away from the transparasteel, its missile racks pointing into the bridge in silent warning and clear command.
Close down the midline quad laser batteries, Vice Lord,
Doriana said quietly.
Then seal the main hangar exits and shut down all the droid starfighters.
He took a careful breath.
And then, prepare for company.
The final turbo lift door slid open, and 20 meters down the corridor, Cardass saw at last the open blast doors of the battleship's bridge. 20 meters of corridor lined on both sides with armed, tense-looking battle droids. Thrawn didn't even hesitate. He strode forward calmly, his two warriors equally sedate as they walked at his sides. Swallowing hard, Cardass forced himself to follow. There were dozens of droids on duty on the bridge, most of them service and monitor units, seated or plugged into the various stations in the control pits. Standing in the center of the quiet activity were just two actual beings, waiting together beside the vacant helm chair. A tall Nymoidian in elaborate robes, and a more sedately dressed human male. Again, Thrawn didn't pause, but headed down the walkway toward them. He stopped 3 meters away, and for a moment seemed to size them up. Then, deliberately, he swiveled to face the human.
Commander Stratis, he said.
I am Commander Mithron Yoruodo.
Stratis does not command this vessel,
the Nymoidian said stiffly before Stratis could answer.
I am Vice Lord Cav of the Trade Federation, and you, Commander Mithrado, have committed an act of war.
Vice Lord, please, Stratis said. Recriminations will serve no useful purpose.
Do not think you have gained anything for your audacity.
Cav continued, ignoring him.
Even now, I could destroy you where you stand.
He gestured, and from behind them came a sudden metallic racket. Cardass spun around, his heart freezing as a pair of droidica destroyer droids rolled into view and came to a halt just inside the bridge blast doors. They unfolded into their tripod stance, and a second later, Cardass found himself staring down the barrels of four pairs of high-energy blasters.
Vice Lord, you fool! Stratis bit out urgently.
What do you think?
Calm yourself, Commander. Thrawn soothed him. We're in no danger.
Carefully, hardly daring to breathe, Cardass turned his head. Stratus's eyes had gone wide, his throat muscles tight as he gripped the Nymoidian's arm. But Thrawn merely stood quietly, his face expressionless as he studied the droidicus.
Interesting design.
That shimmering sphere, a small force field.
Yes,
Stratus said cautiously. I assure you, Commander.
Thank you for the demonstration, Vice Lord,
Thrawn interrupted.
But now you will send them away.
For a long, terrible moment, Cardass thought the Nymoidian was going to defy Thrawn's order, the way he'd ignored Stratus's rebuke. The Chiss and Nymoidian locked eyes, and for half a dozen heartbeats, the bridge was silent. And then Cav's entire body seemed to wilt, his eyes dropping away from Thrawn's stare as he half-lifted a hand toward the droidicas.
Looking back over his shoulder, Cardass watched in relief as the destroyers folded up again and rolled their way off the bridge.
"Thank you," Thrawn said. "Now, as I asked you before, please state your intentions and those of your task force."
"A task force that no longer exists,"
Cav put in.
"That loss was your doing," Thrawn countered. "All I wished was a civilized answer."
He turned to Cardass.
"Is that correct? Civilized?
Or just civil?" Cardass told him. "Or polite?"
"Civil,"
Thrawn said, as if testing the word against some unknown set of guidelines.
"Yes, all I wished, Commander, was a civil answer."
"Yes, I know," Stratus said, his eyes on Cardass. "May I ask your companion's name and origin?" "I'm just a visitor," Cardass said quickly. "That's all."
"Not quite," Thrawn corrected. "Master Cardass was simply a visitor. Now he's my translator."
His expression hardened.
"And my prisoner."
Cardass felt his mouth drop open.
"I'm what?" "You arrived uninvited in Chiss space. Now, less than 3 months later, an invasion fleet from your people has appeared. Coincidence?"
"I had nothing to do with this," Cardass protested.
"And we're not an invasion fleet,"
Stratus added.
"Make me believe that,"
Thrawn said, his voice darkening even further.
"Both of you."
Cardass looked at Stratus.
"Commander,"
he entreated. Stratus's eyes flicked to him, then back to Thrawn, a thoughtful expression suddenly appearing on his face.
"Very well," he said, gesturing toward the side of the bridge. "There's an office back there where we'll have more privacy."
Thrawn inclined his head slightly. "Lead the way." Doriana led them to Cav's command office, his skin prickling with anticipation and the stirrings of fresh hope. An hour ago, it had been all over, the mission a failure. Doriana himself among the walking dead. Even if their attackers allowed them to return to the Republic, he knew the payment Darth Sidious would demand for his failure. But now, suddenly, all that had changed.
Maybe.
"Please make yourselves comfortable," Doriana invited, gesturing his guests to seats facing the desk as he circled around the massive carved wood structure and sat down in Cav's equally elaborate chair.
"May I offer you some refreshment?"
"No, thank you,"
Mithron Yeruido said as he and Cardass sat down.
"All right," Doriana said, focusing his full intellect on the task at hand.
This was it. "Let me tell you about a project called Outbound Flight." He started at the beginning, describing the project's origin and its mission, and making sure to emphasize the dreadnought's size and weaponry.
"Interesting,"
Mithron Yeruido said when he'd finished.
"What does this have to do with us?"
"The fact that outbound flight is a danger to both the Republic and your own people," Doriana told him. "You remember my mentioning a group aboard called the Jedi? These are beings of great power, but who are also dangerous troublemakers."
"In what way?"
"They have very rigid ideas of how people should act and what they should think and do," Doriana said. "They feel they have all the answers, and that everyone else should submit to their concept of justice."
"Yet you say they are traveling to another galaxy,"
Mithron Yeruido reminded him.
"Again, how then does this affect the Chiss?"
"Because before they leave, they intend to explore some of the unknown parts of our own galaxy," Doriana said. "If they arrive in Chiss space, they'll certainly attempt to impose their will upon your people."
"Attempt is the correct word,"
Mithron Yeruido said, his face hardening.
"The Chiss do not simply accept alien concepts without careful consideration. We certainly do not submit to domination.
By anyone.
Of course not, Doriana said. But I warn you not to underestimate them. The Jedi are ruthless and subtle, and I dare say their power is beyond anything you've ever encountered.
You may be surprised at what we've encountered, Mithron Yoruido said, his voice grim. Abruptly he stood up.
But we will discuss such matters later. Right now, there is other business that requires my attention.
Of course, Doriana said, rising to his feet as well. What do you wish us to do in your absence?
For the present, you will both remain on this bridge, Mithron Yoruido said. I will send for you when I wish to see you again. In the meantime, I will send aboard a team to examine your vessel and its equipment.
Never! Cav snapped. This ship is the property of the Trade Federation!
Quiet!
Doriana cut him off, glaring at him. We will, of course, render any and all assistance they may require.
Thank you, Mithron Yoruido said.
They will have new orders for you when they are finished. You will obey those orders.
Doriana nodded.
As you wish.
Mithron Yoruido looked at Cav, and Doriana could sense the tension between them. But the Nymordian remained silent, and after a moment, Mithron Yoruido turned to Cardass.
Come.
They left the room. Doriana watched until they had disappeared through the bridge blast doors, then turned to Cav.
With all due respect, Vice Lord, what in the name of your grub mother do you think you're doing?
That is my question for you, Master Doriana,
Cav countered.
Do you simply turn your back downward and give over our lives and property to this primitive backworld alien?
Look around you, Vice Lord, Doriana said grimly. This primitive alien just wrecked our entire task force. And unless I missed it, he didn't lose a single ship of his own in the process.
And you wish to make him even stronger by offering him access to Trade Federation secrets?
Doriana took a deep breath.
Listen to me,
he said, enunciating his words carefully. We've failed our mission. Even if Mithron Yoruido turned tail right now and left us in peace, there's no way in the universe our single battleship could take on Outbound Flight's 6 dreadnoughts. We would have no choice but to return to the Republic and face Darth Sidious's anger. And I can assure you that you would wish you had died today, torn apart in agony by the Chiss fighters. He lifted a finger.
Unless...
He let the word hang in the air.
Unless?
Cav asked, his voice subdued.
Unless, Doriana said, we can persuade Mithron Yoruido to destroy Outbound Flight for us.
Cardass had been sitting alone at the computer desk in his Springhawk quarters for 3 hours. Struggling through pages and pages of technical Chiyun text and scans, when Thrawn finally arrived.
My apologies for my long absence, the commander said as the door slid shut behind him. I trust you've kept yourself occupied.
I've been studying the tech team's reports as you requested, Cardass said stiffly, turning back to the computer.
And what? Your assessment of the Trade Federation's capabilities?
Thrawn asked patiently. Cardass sighed, feeling like a ship with a misfiring gyro. Those droid starfighters are top-line weapons. I read a report a few months ago speculating that the only reason they didn't completely wipe out their attackers at Naboo was that having to control all those ground troops at the same time overloaded the computer systems and made the starfighter control more sluggish than it should have been. Here, they weren't running any ground troops. In my humble civilian's opinion, if you hadn't knocked out their communications the way you did, they'd have cut us to ribbons.
Agreed, Thrawn said. What about Vice Lord Cav and Commander Stratus, personally?
Why are you even asking me this? Cardass demanded. I thought you didn't trust me.
Thrawn shook his head. Not at all. If you and your companions were spies, you'd have used your access to the base's computer to study our technology and learn the locations of our worlds. Instead,
You've merely worked on improving your language skills. May I sit down?
Yes, of course, Cardass said, scrambling out of his chair and extending a hand. Preoccupied with his own uncertainty and bruised pride, he hadn't even noticed the utter weariness in Thrawn's face and posture. Are you all right?
I'm fine, Thrawn assured him, waving off the proffered hand as he stepped over to the bunk and sat down onto it. I just received word that Admiral Ar-Alani is on her way back.
Cardass frowned.
They're finished studying the Vagari ship already? I believe she's cut short her role in the examination, Thrawn said. That was why I made a point of accusing you of espionage in front of my warriors. After today's events, she will undoubtedly be questioning them, and I wish to have a plausible reason on record as to why you and the others were still in Chiss space. My apologies for any distress that may have caused you.
Don't worry about it, Cardass said, frowning. You think Ar-Alani is suspicious of you?
I have no doubt, Thrawn said, particularly given the reports she's been receiving from Krustai.
But who at your base would have... Cardass broke off as a horrible thought struck him.
Thrass? Your brother? Who else would have felt it necessary to keep her informed?
Are you saying your own brother is trying to sink you? Cardass demanded, still not believing it.
My brother cares deeply about his blood family, including me, Thrawn said, his voice tinged with sadness. But he's disturbed by what he sees as my self-destructive behavior. And as a syndic of the Eighth ruling family, his duty is to protect that family's honor and position.
So he calls an admiral down on you?
If Admiral Ar-Alani is here to reverse my orders, I'll be unable to do anything that will lead to further trouble, Thrawn pointed out. Or so he reasons. With a single course of action, he thus protects both me and the Eighth family.
Cardass thought about the Vagari attack they'd witnessed, and the people pinned helplessly under fire in their hull bubbles.
And meanwhile, people at the Vagari will be free to go their way.
Indeed. Thrawn pressed the palm of his hand against his forehead.
Still, until the Admiral arrives, command remains mine.
What's your impression of Vice Lord Cav and Commander Stratus? With an effort, Cardass dragged his mind away from the images of the Vagari's living shields. For starters, I don't think Stratus is really in command. I just can't see the Nymoidians handing their own ships over to a human that way.
Unless the human is somehow higher in authority than they are, Thrawn pointed out. Or if the human is an agent for such a person. Stratus itself is, of course, an assumed name.
Could be, Cardass agreed. I do think that they're telling the truth about not being an invasion force, though. Even if their storage rings are packed to the shock webbing with battle droids, they can't possibly have enough for a planetary occupation.
Then you conclude their mission is indeed to ambush this outbound flight?
I might, if I knew what outbound flight was, Cardass said. But I've never heard of it. And I don't necessarily trust Stratus's opinions.
Thrawn nodded. Perhaps Kento or Ferassi will have more information.
Maybe, Cardass said. We're heading back to Krustai, then?
I need to be there to welcome Admiral Ar-Alani, Thrawn reminded him. My people here can finish the examination without us.
What if Cav and Stratus decide to kill all of them and make a run for it?
They won't, Thrawn assured him. First of all, they can't simply jump to hyperspace, no matter how much the Vice Lord might like to, not with the whirlwind pinning them in place. But even if they could escape, I don't think they would. Stratus very much wants me to destroy outbound flight for him.
Cardass felt his eyes widen. Is that where this is going?
What did you think all that talk of weaponry and dangerous Jedi was all about?
Thrawn countered. I thought he was trying to get you to let them go, Cardass said, stumbling over his own tongue.
You aren't thinking. I will do whatever necessary to protect those who depend on me,
Thrawn said, his voice carefully precise.
No more, but no less.
He stood up. But that isn't your concern, he said. Once again, I thank you for your assistance.
No problem, Cardass said, standing up as well. One last question, if I may. How are you so sure that those droidicas wouldn't gun us down?
Those... Oh, the rolling droid fighters, Thrawn said. It wasn't difficult. Everything about the bridge design spoke of a people who would never willingly put themselves at more risk than absolutely necessary.
That's Nymoidians, all right, Cardass agreed. You could get that just from the bridge design?
Architecture is merely another form of art, Thrawn reminded him. But even without those indications, the triple blast doors we passed through would have told me that these Nymoidians are not warriors.
Which is why they have battle droids to fight for them, Cardass said. But isn't gunning us down exactly what cowards like that would do?
Thrawn shook his head. Vice Lord Cav was too close to the line of fire. He would never have ordered the droidicas to attack.
Cardass grimaced.
A bluff. Or he was making a point, Thrawn said. These combat droids are a new concept to me, but one worth careful thought.
He grimaced.
I sincerely hope the Vagari haven't visited a world where they might have picked up such weapons.
Outbound flight, Kento repeated, frowning off into space as he slowly shook his head.
Nope, never heard of it.
Me neither, Maris seconded. And you say this Cav and Stratus want to destroy it?
Cav and whoever, Cardass said. Thrawn thinks Stratus is an alias.
Fine, Cav and Master No One,
Kento said impatiently.
So why do they want to destroy it?
Cardass shrugged.
Stratus spun a big loop pastry about how dangerous the Jedi are and how they want to take over and make everyone to do things their way.
But that has to be a lie.
Not necessarily, Kento said. A lot of people out there are starting to wonder about the Jedi.
They're certainly helping to prop up the Coruscant bureaucracy, Maris pointed out. Anyone who wants genuine government reform will have to persuade the Jedi to change sides.
Or else kill them, Kento said.
So what do we do? Maris asked.
We do nothing, Kento said firmly.
It's not our problem. You hear me? It's not our problem. If the Jedi are going to go flying off into the unknown regions, it's up to them to figure out how to protect themselves. It's up to us to figure out how to get ourselves out of here. That is, if you think you can drag yourself away from all this nobility and culture.
That's not fair, Maris protested, her eyes hard, even as a touch of pink colored her cheeks.
Whatever.
Kento turned back to Cardass.
You're his confidant these days, kid. You think you can sweet-talk him into letting us have that Vagari loot his brother locked away?
He jerked a thumb at Maris.
Or should I ask Maris to do it?
Rack?
Maris began.
I don't think sweet-talk is going to be the issue, Cardass said hastily. The tension between Kento and Maris was starting to drift into the red zone again. He can't give it to us unless his brother and Admiral Arulani both let him. So how do we get Arulani back here? Maris asked.
We don't have to,
Cardass said grimly, glancing at his chrono. As a matter of fact, Thrawn's probably welcoming her onto the base right now.
Great, Kento said, brightening. Let's get our hearing, get our loot, and get out of here.
Cardass sighed. I'll do what I can. He left their quarters and started down the corridor. Arulani's welcoming ceremony was probably over, but she and Thrawn were most likely still together, probably talking about Thrass's accusations. Arulani hadn't struck him as the sort who would waste any more time with ceremonial niceties than necessary.
So you do have free run of the base.
Cardass turned. Thrass was coming up behind him, his expression giving no hint as to what was going on behind those glowing eyes.
Syndic Mithrasophis, Cardass greeted him.
Forgive my surprise. I assumed you'd be with your brother and the Admiral.
Thrass inclined his head.
Come with me, please.
He turned and strode off down the corridor. Cardass followed. Thrass led the way to the upper level of the base, where Thrawn and the senior officers had their quarters. They passed a few warriors along the way,
none of whom gave either the Syndic or the human so much as a curious glance, and finally arrived at a door marked with Chiyun symbols that Cardass couldn't quite decipher.
"In there,"
Thras said. Bracing himself, Cardass stepped past him into the room. He found himself in a small conference room with half a dozen computer-equipped chairs, arranged in a circle around a central hologramic display. Seated on the far side of the circle, resplendent in her white uniform, was Admiral Aralani.
"Be seated, Cardass," she said in Chiyun, as Thras stepped into the room behind him.
"Thank you, Admiral," Cardass said in the same language as he took the seat directly across from her. "Welcome back." She nodded acknowledgement, studying him thoughtfully, as Thras sat down in the chair to her right.
"I understand you were with Commander Mithron Yuruodo on his last military venture. Tell us what happened."
Cardass glanced at Thras, back at Aralani. "First of all, it wasn't really an act of aggression," he said, picking his words carefully. "It was an expedition to investigate unknown warships that had been reported in the area. Vessels that wouldn't have been reported at all if Mithron Yuruodo wasn't already inclined to premature military action," Aralani pointed out. Beside her, Thras stirred in his seat.
"The expansionary fleet's charter does require observation and exploration in the regions around the Chiss Ascendancy."
"Observation and exploration," Aralani countered. "Not unprovoked military action." She lifted her eyebrows. "Or do you deny military action was taken and Chiss casualties sustained?"
Cardass frowned. "I was unaware that any Chiss warriors had been lost.
The Whirlwind did not return from the battle," Aralani said.
"Oh," Cardass said, breathing a little easier. "Of course. The missing cruiser was still at the battle scene, keeping the Darkvenge pinned down with the Vagari grav projector. But he obviously couldn't tell Aralani that. I still maintain that Commander Mithron Yuruodo fought only in self-defense."
"Did the unknown enemy fire first?"
"The firing of weapons isn't always the first act of aggression," Cardass hedged. "The Trade Federation battleships launched a massive force of droid starfighters. I've read reports of battles in which these weapons were used, and if Commander Mithron Yuruodo hadn't acted to neutralize them, his force would quickly have been overwhelmed."
"Perhaps," Aralani said. "We'll know better once you've shown us around the battle zone."
Cardass felt his mouth go suddenly dry.
"Around the..." "You object?" Aralani demanded.
"Well, for starters, I don't even know where it is," Cardass said, stalling for time as he thought furiously. "If Aralani found the Darkvenge sitting out there..."
"The location isn't a problem," Aralani assured him, holding up a slender cylinder tapered at both ends. "I have the last 2 months' worth of the Springhawk's navigational data."
Cardass fought back a grimace. "All right, but shouldn't we check first with Commander Mithron Yuruodo?"
"We're going now, precisely because I don't want Commander Mithron Yuruodo to know about it," Aralani said. "I've sent him on a security sweep of the nearby systems, which should give us time to examine the battle zone and return."
Her eyes glittered.
"And only then will we ask for his version of the battle."
"Preparing for first target," Sebaeth said, his deep voice sounding strained as it resonated from the low ceiling of the weapons blister. "Firing now!"
His hands moved in an almost dreamlike way over the controls, and there was a flicker of indicator lights as one of Dreadnought One's sets of turbo lasers delivered a massive broadside blast. Standing near the blister's doorway, Obi-Wan stretched out to the Force. On the other side of the dreadnought, he could sense Lorana Jinsler also firing her turbo lasers, while all the way on the far side of outbound flight on Dreadnought 4, Maning and the two Duros Jedi did the same.
"Wow," Anakin muttered at his side. "That's intense."
"Yes," Obi-Wan agreed, eyeing Sebaeth closely. This was the Jedi Master's third meld today, and the strain of the procedure had to be getting to him. But if it was, Obi-Wan couldn't detect it in the other's face or sense. He'd always assumed that at least part of Sabaoth's unshakable confidence in himself was either an act, or else a vast overestimation of his actual abilities. Now, for the first time, he began to wonder if the man might actually be as strong in the Force as he claimed.
Spotter control, all Test 1 volleys on target, a voice reported from the comm panel.
Pretty good, Anakin muttered.
Very good, you mean, Obi-Wan said. Can you sense any of Master Sabaoth's commands, or just the presence of the meld itself?
I don't know, Anakin said, and Obi-Wan could sense the boy tightening his concentration.
Preparing for second target, Sabaoth announced.
Spotter control ready.
Firing now, Sabaoth said.
Again, the indicators flickered.
Target 2 hit, the spotter reported. 1 flyer.
What's a flyer? Anakin asked.
It means one of the shots missed the target, Obi-Wan told him, frowning.
There'd been something odd on that last shot, something he couldn't quite put his finger on. Stretching out again to the Force, this time focusing on the edges of the meld instead of on its center, he tried to track it down.
Preparing for third target, Sabaoth said. Firing now.
And this time, as the indicators once again flickered, Obi-Wan saw it. Sabaoth had set up a total of 6 targets in this exercise. Obi-Wan forced himself to wait until all 6 had been destroyed, the last 4 with as impressive an accuracy quotient as the first 2. The spotter delivered his final report, and with a shaking jerk of his head, Sabaoth broke the meld. For a few seconds he just sat there, blinking rapidly as the last tendrils of connection between him and his fellow Jedi dissolved completely away. Then, taking a deep breath, he exhaled a long sigh and turned to Obi-Wan and Anakin.
What did you think, Master Skywalker?
Very intense, Anakin said. I've never seen anything like it before. When can I try it?
Not until after you've completed your training, Sabaoth said. This isn't something Padawans should be fooling around with.
The star lines cleared away, and a small and distant red sun appeared in the Dark Venge's bridge viewports.
So?
Cav growled. Patience, Vice Lord, Doriana advised, watching the blue-skinned alien standing beside the helm, peering at the small device in his hand. Mithron Yoruido had left the technician behind to guide them to the location the Chiss commander had specified. A moment later, the tech gave a small nod and murmured a few words to the silvery TC-18 translator droid at his side.
He says, we're here, Vice Lord Cav,
the droid reported.
Cav sniffed. Wherever here is.
Here is wherever Commander Mithron Yoruido wants us to be, Doriana said, not bothering to conceal his disgust with the other.
Then where is he?
Cav demanded.
2 incoming vessels,
the Nymoidian at the sensors called.
1 Chiss cruiser, 1 smaller vessel.
The Chiss tech spoke again in the Sibisti trade language.
They are the Springhawk and the long-range shuttle,
the TC droid announced primly.
Commander Mithron Yoruido will wish to board immediately.
Tell the commander his usual docking port has been prepared for him, Doriana said. A few minutes later, Mithron Yoruido strode through the blast doors onto the bridge, a pair of Chiss warriors trailing behind him.
Welcome aboard, Commander, Doriana said, rising from the couch.
Thank you,
Mithron Yoruido said.
I appreciate your swift compliance with my instructions.
As I told you earlier, we wish to be fully cooperative, Doriana reminded him.
Excellent, Mithron Yoruido said. I wish you to begin unloading your droid starfighters.
Cav jerked like he'd been kicked.
What do you say?
Your droid starfighters are to be transported to that asteroid.
Mithron Yoruido pointed out the viewports at a small, irregularly shaped crescent of faint light against the stars.
After that, I will require the services of those who program their combat movements.
Cav gurgled under his breath.
This is outrageous. I will not consent to...
Be silent, Doriana cut in, his eyes on Mithron Yoruido. You have a plan for dealing with outbound flight, don't you? I have a plan, Mithron Yoruido confirmed. Whether or not I activate it depends on whether or not you're ready to tell me the truth.
An uncomfortable lump formed in Doriana's throat.
Explain, please. Your name is not Stratus, Mithron Yoruido said. You're not your own master, but answer to another. And the social threat posed by these Jedi is not the true reason you seek outbound flight's destruction. He lifted his eyebrows. If, indeed, you genuinely do seek its destruction.
What other reason would we have to be here? Doriana asked.
Perhaps your intent was to rendezvous with them, Mithron Yoruido suggested. If outbound flight is filled with warriors instead of colonists, together your combined forces would have had both the firepower and the personnel necessary to launch an effective bridgehead invasion.
I've already told you we're not here for conquest.
I know what you told me, Mithron Yoruido said. Now you must persuade me to believe it.
Of course, Doriana said. I believe I can answer all of your questions together. If you'll come with me, I'd like to introduce you to my superior.
Deliberately, he looked at Cav. You, Vice Lord, will remain here. He didn't wait for Cav's inevitable protest, but set off across the bridge, leading Mithron Yoruido back to the office where they'd first conferred 2 days earlier. He ushered the Chiss inside and sealed the door. Doriana's special holoprojector was already hooked into the Dark Venge's comm system. Punching in the access code, he gestured Mithron Yoruido to the desk chair.
Your first point is absolutely correct. My true name is Kinmen Doriana, an identity I've taken care to keep secret from Vice Lord Cav's crew and other associates.
You play mutually opposing roles, then?
Doriana stared. How did you know that?
It was obvious. Who are your two masters?
My official public master is Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, the head of the Republic government, Doriana said, the words echoing strangely in his ears. My true master is a Sith Lord named Darth Sidious.
A Sith Lord is...
A being who stands against the Jedi and their control over the Republic, Doriana explained.
Ah, Mithron Yoruido said. A power struggle.
In a way, Doriana conceded, but on a plane far different from the one where beings like you and I exist. What's important right now is that Lord Sidious has access to information sources the Jedi don't have.
And what do these sources tell him?
Doriana braced himself. There's an invasion coming. A massive assault force of dark ships, shadowy figures, and weapons of great power, based on organic technology of a sort we've never seen before. We believe these far outsiders, as we call them, already have a foothold at the far edge of the galaxy, and even now have scouting parties seeking information on worlds and peoples to conquer.
Stories of mysterious invaders are both convenient and difficult to disprove, Mithron Yoruido pointed out. Why do you only now tell me this?
Doriana nodded toward the door.
Because Vice Lord Cav and his associates don't know. Neither does anyone else in the Republic. Not yet.
When will Darth Sidious tell them?
When he's turned the Republic's chaos into order, Doriana said.
When we've built an army and a fleet capable of dealing with the threat. To announce it before then would do nothing but create panic and leave us open to disaster.
How does outbound flight fit into all this?
As I said, we believe the far outsiders are currently still gathering information, Doriana said. So far, there's no indication that they even know about the Republic. He felt his throat tighten. Actually, that's not entirely true. He corrected himself reluctantly. One of the Jedi, a being named Vergere, disappeared in that region some time ago. That's one of Outbound Flight's private agendas, in fact, to try to learn what happened to her.
I see,
Mithron Yoruido said, nodding slowly.
And while a single prisoner can give only hints of his or her origin, an entire shipful of them can provide all that would be needed for a successful invasion.
Exactly, Doriana said, not to mention all the data files and technology they would be able to examine. If Outbound Flight blunders into their bridgehead, we could find ourselves facing an attack long before we're ready.
Above the holoprojector, the familiar hooded figure shimmered into view. The hologram was a bit more ragged than usual, Doriana noted, but the connection itself seemed more solid than he'd feared it would be. Sidious was evidently somewhere much closer than his usual haunts on Coruscant.
Report.
His unseen eyes seemed to catch sight of Mithron Yoruido, and the drooping corners of his mouth drooped a little farther.
Who is this?
This is Commander Mithron Yoruido of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet, Lord Sidious. I'm afraid we've had a slight setback in our mission.
I don't wish to hear about setbacks, Master Doriana.
Yes, my lord, Doriana said, trying to stay calm. Let me explain. He gave Sidious a summary of the one-sided battle with the Chiss. Somewhere during the explanation, Sidious's face turned from staring at him to staring at Mithron Yoruido.
Impressive,
he said when Doriana finished.
And only one of your ships survives.
Doriana nodded. And only because Commander Mithron Yoruido chose to leave it intact.
Most impressive, Commander Mithron Yoruido. I take it from your presence here that Master Doriana has explained the need to stop Outbound Flight before it passes beyond your territory.
He has, Mithron Yoruido confirmed. Have you proof of this impending alien threat?
I have reports. Master Doriana will detail them for you if you wish. Assuming you're convinced, what will be your response?
Mithron Yoruido's eyes flicked to Doriana. Assuming I'm convinced, I'll agree to Master Doriana's request to intercept and stop Outbound Flight.
Excellent. But be warned, the Jedi will not accept defeat lightly, and they have the power to reach across great distances to touch and manipulate the minds of others. You cannot allow them knowledge of your attack before it is launched.
I understand, Mithron Yoruido said. Thank you for your time, Lord Sidious.
I look forward to hearing the report of your victory.
Sidious sent a final look at Doriana, and with a flicker, the image was gone. For a long moment, Mithron Yoruido sat without speaking, his glowing eyes glittering with thought. I'll need a full technical readout on Outbound Flight and its component dreadnoughts. I trust you have current information, up to and including even the final passenger listings, Doriana assured him. Now that you know about Jedi power against living gunners, shall I cancel your order to remove our droid starfighters?
Of course not,
Mithron Yoruido said. And I'll also need 2 of your droidicas and 4 of your battle droids to be packed and loaded aboard my long-range shuttle for transport to my base. I presume that 6 droids can be controlled by something more portable than this vessel's computer? Yes, there are localized datapad systems that can handle up to 200 droids each, Doriana said, suppressing a grimace. I'll pack one in with the droidicas.
"14 vessels,"
Admiral Aralani declared, her glowing eyes sweeping the field of debris stretched out before them. "Possibly 13, if the 2 sections of wreckage to the right belonged to a single vessel that broke apart before exploding."
"Is that the correct number, Cardass?"
Thras asked. "Yes, that sounds about right," Cardass agreed, his muscles wilting a little with relief. The 15th ship, the intact Trade Federation battleship, was nowhere to be seen. He just hoped that it was Thrawn who'd moved it, and that it hadn't managed to skip out on its own. Of course, I was just an observer. I didn't have access to the sensor information. Plus, there were a considerable number of those, Aralani continued, pointing at the charred sections of two droid starfighters floating past the bridge canopy, too small to be staffed. They're mechanical devices called droids, Cardass said. These in particular are called droid starfighters. Thrass grunted. If the field of battle is any indication of their combat abilities, I would say they're misnamed. Don't be misled by your brother's skill at warfare, Syndic Mithras Safis, Aralani warned. If these droids were as useless as you imply, no one would take the time and effort to build them. I've seen reports of them in combat, Cardass confirmed. Against most opponents, they're quite formidable. Yet I still see no evidence that these weapons or their masters attacked first, Aralani pointed out. I can only repeat what I said earlier, Admiral, Cardass told her. The mere act of launching the starfighters was an overt act of aggression. Commander Mithron Yerudo responded in the only way he could to protect his forces. Perhaps, Aralani said. That will be for a military tribunal to decide. Cardass felt his stomach tighten. You're bringing him up on charges?
That will also be for the tribunal to decide, Thrass said. But we'll first need to examine the records of the battle and interview the warriors who were present. At this battle, as well as the earlier raid against the Vagari, Aralani added.
I understand, Cardass said, his heart starting to beat a little faster. Here was the opening he'd been looking for. Speaking of the Vagari, my colleagues and I were hoping we could settle the question soon about the treasure we were promised, so that we can be on our way. Aralani's eyebrows arched.
Now suddenly you're in a hurry to return home?
We're merchants, Cardass reminded her. This has been an interesting and productive side trip, but the cargo in our hold is way overdue for delivery.
A cargo you would very much like to supplement with stolen pirate plunder.
Yes, but only because our customers will demand late delivery penalties, Cardass explained. There's no way for us to pay those without the items Captain Kento has requested.
You should have thought about that before deciding to stay, Thrass said. At any rate, the matter of the treasure will have to wait until the tribunal has made its decision. If my brother is found to have violated Chiss military doctrine, he'll have no standing to argue your side of the question.
I understand, Cardass said heavily. How long is this hearing likely to take?
That depends on how quickly I can collect the details of the two battles, Aralani said. Once I've done so, I request that a tribunal be seated.
Weeks, in other words. Possibly even months.
And what will Commander Mithron Yerudo's status be until then? I'll be supervising his operations and overseeing all of his orders, Aralani said. She nodded fractionally at Thrass. At Syndic Mithrasophis's request.
Cardass looked at Thrass, a prickling sensation on the back of his neck. Once again, Thrawn's analysis had proved right on the mark. You do this to your own brother?
The muscles in Thrass's cheeks tightened. But it was Aralani who answered.
Neither Syndic Mithrasophis nor I is unsympathetic toward Commander Mithron Nurudo, she said evenly. We wish only to protect him from his own excesses of zeal and ability.
From his excess of ability? Cardass snorted. That's a new one.
He's a gifted tactician and commander, Aralani said, but without proper restraint. He'll eventually go too far and end his days in exile. What good will those gifts do anyone then?
And meanwhile, the Vagari are free to destroy and kill?
Aralani looked away.
The lives of other beings are not ours to interfere with, for good or for ill. We cannot and will not trust in whatever feelings of sympathy we might have for the victims of tyranny.
Then trust in Mithron Yerudo, Cardass urged. You both agree he's a gifted tactician. and he's convinced that the Vagari are a threat you'll eventually have to face. The longer you wait, the more alien technology and weaponry you let them steal, the stronger they'll be.
Then that is what we'll face, Thras said firmly. And as a syndic of the 8th ruling family, I cannot listen to any more of this. He jabbed a finger at the carnage outside the viewport. Now, describe this battle for us.
It had been a long and tiring day, but the last group of droid starfighters had finally been unloaded and deployed across the asteroid's uneven landscape. Now, his growling stomach reminding Doriana of the lateness of the hour, he made his way to the Dark Venge's Supreme Officer's dining room to get something to eat. Cav was already there, seated alone at one of the corner tables, his expression daring anyone to interrupt him. Doriana took the hint and directed the serving droid to one of the tables on the opposite side of the room. He was halfway through his dinner when Cav suddenly stood up and made his way across the room.
"This Mithrado,"
he said, without preamble, as he sat down across from Doriana.
"You think him a genius, do you?"
"I consider him a highly effective military commander and tactician," Doriana said, eyeing the other. "His abilities at art or philosophy, I can't vouch for."
"Amusing," Cav growled. "But he is not even a good tactician. He is instead a fool."
Pulling a datapad from inside his robes, he dropped it on the table in front of Doriana.
"See the reprogramming he has ordered for my starfighters."
Doriana glanced at the datapad's display, covered with droid language symbolics. "I don't read tech," he said. Cav snorted contemptuously.
"He has programmed the starfighters for close approach attacks."
Doriana frowned back at the datapad.
"How close?" "I believe the term is hull skimming," Cav said, tapping the display. "The chief programmer informs me the attack is set for no more than 5 meters above the hull."
Doriana rubbed his cheek thoughtfully. "I don't suppose anyone thought to mention to him that dreadnoughts come with a very good point defense system?"
"The programmers did not think it their place to speak out of turn."
"And neither did you?"
"I?"
Cav feigned innocence.
"You, of all people, should know better than to question the orders of a military genius."
Doriana took a deep breath. "Vice Lord, I strongly suggest you remember our ultimate objective here. We've been sent to destroy outbound flight. Without Mithron Yerudo's aid, we have no chance of doing that."
"Yet a being of his genius is certainly capable of grasping technical readouts,"
Cav said blandly.
"Perhaps his plan is to throw our starfighters against outbound flight in an awesome display of disintegrating metal that will frighten Captain Pakmilu into submission."
"So in the end, all you care about is your pride," Doriana said. "You don't even care if Darth Sidious executes us both, as long as you can find some small point where you can feel superior to Mithron Yerudo."
"Calm yourself, Master Doriana," Cav said. "There is no reason why my pride and my victory cannot coexist."
"Explain."
"I have not told Mithrado of the flaw in his plan," the Vice Lord said with spiteful satisfaction. "But I have instructed the chief programmer to create a secondary attack pattern for the starfighters, which has been overlaid across Mithrado's primary pattern. Once he has wasted the first wave in his foolish close approach attack, I will take command and switch to a more effective line of attack."
Doriana thought it over. "That would probably work," he decided. "It still loses us a full attack wave," he reminded Cav. "Not to mention the element of surprise."
"What surprise?" Cav scoffed. "As soon as they see the Dark Venge, they will know to prepare for droid starfighters."
Doriana pressed his fingertips together. "I don't suppose it's occurred to you that Mithron Yerudo might have offloaded the starfighters precisely because he doesn't intend to let Captain Pakmilu see the Dark Venge. That, in fact, he doesn't intend for the Dark Venge to participate in the battle at all.
That is ridiculous. No military commander would refuse to bring a battleship of our might into his fleet.
Except maybe a commander who's already seen how easily they can be destroyed? Doriana couldn't resist asking. Cav's whole body stiffened.
I perceive that you have come under Mithrado's spell, Master Doriana,
he said evenly.
But do not be swayed by his learned manner and cultured voice. He is still a primitive savage, and no matter what the outcome, in the end, he will have to die.
Doriana sighed. Regardless, for the moment, we still need him alive.
How have you arranged for us to reach this second programming level? I will have a relay control,
Cav said.
Once Mithrador's failure is apparent, I will bring the starfighters back under my control, and will complete our mission.
He cocked his head.
Unless you have further objections.
Doriana shook his head. Though we'll have to make sure we're on his bridge when the battle begins.
I leave that to you, Cav said. He is a fool in other areas as well. Did you know he has taken 20 of my starfighters and linked them together by twos with a spare fuel tank between them?
What good does that do? Doriana asked, frowning. Those starfighters run on solid fuel slugs. You're sure they're fuel tanks?
What else could they be?
Cav countered, getting to his feet.
A pleasant evening to you, Master Doriana.
There, Captain Pakmilu said, pointing a flippered hand at the planet visible through D1's bridge viewports.
Roxyuli, our last stop in known space. From this point on, we enter territory never before seen throughout all the ages of Republic star travel.
It's indeed an historic moment, Obi-Wan agreed. With your permission, Captain, I'd like to send a signal to Coruscant through Roxyuli's holonet connection.
Certainly,
Pakmilu said, gesturing aft.
The secure comm room will be at your disposal as soon as our guest is finished.
Obi-Wan frowned. Less than an hour since outbound flight had made orbit, and already they had a guest? Obi-Wan turned and felt his mouth drop open. Their visitor was none other than Supreme Chancellor Palpatine himself.
Master Kenobi,
Palpatine called as he crossed the bridge toward them.
Just the man I need.
This is an unexpected honor, Chancellor Palpatine, Obi-Wan said. May I ask what brings you to this edge of the Republic?
The same thing that moves all of us across the stars these days,
Palpatine replied with a wan smile.
Politics, of course. In this case, trouble between the Roxyuli's central government and the system's asteroid mining colonies.
It must be serious if you have to come out personally, Obi-Wan commented.
Actually, they don't want me at all, Palpatine said dryly. All they want from me is to obtain for them the services of famed negotiator, Master Joris Sabaeth.
Obi-Wan looked at Pakmilu. I'm not sure Master Sabaeth will be interested in the job, he warned Palpatine.
As a matter of fact, he isn't,
the Supreme Chancellor confirmed.
I've already spoken with him, and he flatly refuses to leave outbound flight.
We could delay our departure until his negotiations have finished,
Pakmilu offered.
There's no reason we couldn't spend a few days here.
No, I've already suggested that option,
Palpatine said, shaking his head.
He will not change outbound flight's schedule, or leave outbound flight at all, for that matter.
He looked back at Obi-Wan.
But there is another alternative. Perhaps you would be willing to mediate in his place.
Obi-Wan blinked in surprise. With all due respect, Chancellor Palpatine, I don't think that's a substitution that would satisfy them.
On the contrary, Palpatine said. I've just spoken with them, and they would be most gratified if you would lend your assistance.
Very well, Obi-Wan said with a sigh. I presume I'll be bringing my Padawan as well.
You can hardly let him go running off to the next galaxy without you,
Palpatine agreed, the lines smoothing out a bit, and Obi-Wan could sense his relief.
I'll take the two of you down in my ship. After that, I'm afraid I must return to Coruscant, but I'll leave one of my guard and his escort ship to bring you back when you're finished.
3 days later, after Thrawn had made his report, Cardass was once again standing alone, facing the Admiral. No, Cardass said firmly, meeting Arulani's glowing eyes as calmly as he could. We're not spies. Not for the Republic, not for anyone else.
Then what precisely did Commander Mithron Nurudo mean by his accusation?
The Admiral countered.
And don't deny he said it. I have the sworn statements of the two warriors who were present at the time.
I don't deny it, Cardass said, his eyes flicking to Thras. The Syndic was standing silently a few steps behind Arulani, his expression harder even than the Admiral's. Perhaps he knew better than she did what a charge of harboring spies would mean to his brother's career. But I also can't explain it. Maybe he was trying to confuse the Trade Federation commanders.
Commanders who have apparently vanished, Arulani said pointedly, along with an apparently intact alien warship.
I don't know anything about that either, Cardass insisted. All I know is what I've already told you. We're merchants who had a hyperdrive accident and lost our way. Ask the rest of my crew if you don't believe me.
Oh, I will, Arulani assured him. In the meantime, you're confined to your quarters. Dismissed.
Turning, Cardass stalked out of the room. But he didn't go to his quarters. The Chiss warriors were used to seeing him roaming freely around the base, and it hadn't sounded like Arulani would make any official pronouncements to the contrary until after she'd interrogated Kento and Maris. He had that long to make his escape. The shuttle was still in the slot where he had thought to park it the previous day. There were a few Chiss working in the area, but the time for subterfuge was long past. Striding along like he owned the place, Cardass stepped through the hatchway into the shuttle, sealed it, and headed forward. Within 5 minutes, he had the systems up and running. 5 minutes more, and he had disengaged from the docking clamps and was making his way carefully down the tunnel. No one followed him out. Turning the shuttle onto the proper vector, he hit the hyperdrive control and made the jump to light speed. The next stop, assuming he'd properly programmed in the Springhawk's nav data, would be the alien system where he, Thrawn, and Maris had witnessed the Vagari attack 5 weeks ago. With luck, that campaign would be over. With even more luck, the Vagari would still be there. Six hours later, he emerged from hyperspace to find that the battle was indeed over. There were dozens of Vagari ships orbiting the planet, nestled up to it like carrion avians around a fresh corpse. Most were the bubble-hulled warships they'd seen in the battle. But there were also a number of the civilian transports that had been waiting for the fighting to end. Cardass turned toward the largest of the orbiting warships and headed in. Suddenly, his comm crackled with melodious but evil-sounding alien speech.
I don't understand your language, Cardass replied in Sibisti. Do you speak Sibisti?
The only response was more alien speech.
How about Minisiat?
He asked, switching to his newest trade language.
Can anyone there understand Minisiat?
There was a short pause.
State your name, your species, and your intentions.
The alien voice came back.
My name is Georges Cardass, Cardass told him. I'm a human from a world called Corellia.
He took a deep breath. I'm here to offer you a deal. Cardass was escorted to a starboard docking bay in one of the smaller warships. A group of heavily armed and armored guards was waiting there for him. Short bipeds with large hands, their features hidden by faceplates lavishly decorated to look like fright masks. They took him to a small room loaded with sensor equipment, where he was stripped, searched, and scanned multiple times. His clothing taken away, presumably for similar scrutiny. Afterward, he was taken to another room, this one bare of everything.